Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last month, Visha Ratanapakdi, an 84-year-old Thai grandfather, was out for a morning walk in the Anza Vista neighborhood of San Francisco when a young man barreled towards him and pushed him down. Ratanapakdi sustained multiple injuries and later died. San Francisco officials say a 19-year-old has been charged with one count of murder. A few weeks ago, a 91-year-old man was violently shoved to the ground right outside of the Asian Resource Center in Oakland's Chinatown neighborhood. Carl Chan, president of the Chinatown Chamber of Commerce, told ABC 7 that between January 31st and February 4th, he collected more than 20 incident reports and videos of small businesses in the area being robbed and owners and customers being assaulted. Last week, a 64-year-old grandmother was assaulted and robbed outside of a Vietnamese market in San Jose. These recent attacks against the Asian American community in the Bay Area have sparked national media attention and national outrage. In San Francisco, community members have started a community patrol group. Here is William Lex Hahn, a community activist, and Russell Young, professor of Asian American studies at San Francisco State, speaking to Al Jazeera.
What we want to do is to make our elderly feel safe. You know, there are a lot are out and about right now because of the Chinese New Year and Lunar New Year. And we just want to make them feel safe.
Activists say the assaults reflect a bigger problem in U.S. society.
It's part of the, again, deep-rooted systemic racism in America that sees some people as belonging and others as outsiders. And right now we're cast as perpetual foreigners and threats.
On Sunday, activists and citizens gathered for a rally in San Francisco called Love Our People, Heal Our Communities. There was a similar rally in Oakland on Saturday. Here's Jen Nyan with the EM Collective, Oakland City Council President Nikki Fortunato Bass, and again, William Lex Hahn speaking to KPIX in Oakland.
We want our Asian community safe, you know. We want our elders to be safe. They are vulnerable.
Before the rally, several black leaders, including Oakland council members, gathered at City Hall in a show of unity. They acknowledged anti-Asian hate and violence and anti-blackness are not new.
The way that we address it is by getting to the root causes of what causes violence and crime, violence and poverty, and that's health care, education, housing, jobs.
All marginalized people combined, we are the majority. So we need to come together to support each other, protect each other, and tap into that collective power.
Activists and citizens also say the violence escalated after Donald Trump used racist slurs and blamed China and Asians for COVID over and over again, and this was repeated in the media endlessly. On January 26th, shortly after President Biden took office, he signed a memorandum to address the rise of anti-Asian hate incidents. It issues guidance for the Department of Justice on how to better collect data and assist with the reporting of anti-Asian attacks and violence. Joining us to talk about all of this are two guests. Cynthia Choi is co-executive director of Chinese for Affirmative Action. That's a community civil rights organization in San Francisco. This organization is one of several groups that helped organize Sunday's action in San Francisco. Cynthia is also co-creator of the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. This is an initiative that was formed last March due to the rise in xenophobia due to the pandemic. The group received over 2,800 firsthand reports of racism and discrimination targeting Asian Americans between March 19th and December 31st. They received reports from 47 states and D.C. Over 7% of those crimes were against Asian Americans over 60 years old. They have now documented more than 3,000 attacks to date. Hi, Cynthia. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you so much, Rose, for having me.
We're also joined by Melissa Borja, Assistant Professor of American Culture at the University of Michigan, where she is a core faculty member in the Asian Pacific Islander American Studies program. Melissa is the 2020-2021 Warren Center Fellow at Harvard and is an affiliated researcher with the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. Melissa released a report in October called The Return of the Yellow Peril, which analyzed tweets from presidential and Senate candidates, and it found that Donald Trump was by far the main source of the rhetoric that stigmatizes Asia and Asian American people. 136 tweets used or defended racist terms like the, quote, Chinese virus, and all of them came from Republican politicians. Hi, Melissa. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful to be here.
Well, it's great to have both of you. And Cynthia, I want to start off with you. You attended the action on Sunday. Chinese for Affirmative Action is one of the groups that helped organize the action. What are you hearing from community members? One of the headlines at ABC News says violent attacks on elderly Asian Americans in the Bay Area leaves community members traumatized. How are people doing right now?
Well, this is a very challenging time. Our community members are very fearful. As we've documented, many of our community members have been subjected to verbal assaults, physical assaults, discriminatory treatment, including our most vulnerable members. And while we don't know if these recent incidents are racially motivated, we do know that the impact is devastating because people are fearful of leaving their home, feel as though they'll be attacked at the grocery store. And, you know, this isn't just new, actually, to our community. Violence and crime is something that many communities, particularly in low-income communities, have endured, which is why our coalition locally really put this rally on together to demand for a response, including investments to support survivors and their families and to do a lot of the prevention intervention work that's necessary to, again, prevent these incidents from occurring. And of course, we have to get to the root causes of violence and crime.
Right. What would you add, Melissa? What are you hearing from community members?
No, I am engaging in this issue from a different corner of the country, from the Midwest. But I want to affirm that the incidents that took place in the Bay Area are affecting Asian Americans all across the country. That even in places like Michigan, Asian Americans are concerned about their safety. And this is a difficult time for so many people for so many reasons. And to add this fear of violence and attack only exacerbates it. So I want to emphasize that Asian Americans all across the country are feeling deeply hurt and wounded by these incidents.
And as you both say, this is such a hard time for people. People are really struggling to make ends meet. I think, Cynthia, this is also disturbing. What's so disturbing to add to all of this is in the videos that we've seen, in some cases, people have been robbed. And in other cases, as you said, people are walking down the street and they're just being violently shoved. I mean, in the case, the sad, sad case of Visha Ratanapakti, an 84-year-old Thai grandfather, who, according to reports, actually moved to the United States to be with his grandchildren. He was just out for a morning walk when someone barreled toward him and pushed him down, and he sadly died after that. So it's just some of these incidents are just random acts of violence. Can you talk more about that?
Well, you know, the facts of the case are still being investigated, but we all saw the video. It's shocking. And, you know, I have a mother who just turned, you know, 76 yesterday, mm-hmm. and it's deeply personal. And this is what our community is enduring at this time. We are trying to do the best that we can to also be responsible in not creating hysteria as well. So according to, you know, the firsthand accounts on our site, you know, they're largely verbal harassment, dehumanizing experiences that people are reporting to our site. And we have a smaller number of what we consider hate crimes. But what we do know is that if there aren't interventions, if these cases aren't taken seriously, they certainly, you know, can escalate. And this is why we are asking for more investments in some of the initiatives that I talked about earlier, which is we really need to get to those driving forces of violence and crime and also racial bias. We are a part of the racial reckoning that's taking place across this country and globally. And I'm very grateful that there is more attention to how racism and violence affects Asian Americans.
Well, let's elaborate on that. You say that if there are not interventions, this violence can escalate. Let's talk more about the kind of interventions that you would like to see.
Well, I think it's really important to recognize that Asian American organizations across the country have been involved in these types of efforts for a very long time. We're part of a network that was formed in the wake of the surge, but these are organizations that have been working on advancing racial equity and economic justice. So some of the interventions that we think are important are programs that really look at addressing conflicts in communities. We need more investments in after-school programs. We need more job opportunities. We are recognizing because of the fact that COVID has really like lifted this curtain over the fact that there's such structural deprivation, systemic racism around housing, food security, issues around who has access to healthcare. All of these are factors that drive crime and violence. And these are the things that we really have to get to, in addition to, I think, the cross-racial healing work that needs to be done. So many of our community members, I think the most recent incident that I, or statistic that I can refer to, is that 75% of Asian Americans feel very anxious at this time, feel very fearful about being attacked. And this is across the board for all communities who are enduring so much during this pandemic.
And Melissa, we will talk about the report you released called The Return of the Yellow Peril in a minute. But what would you add when it comes to interventions and asking for more investments? Some of the things that Cynthia was talking about, what would you like to add?
Add that all of the things she mentioned, community outreach, conducting trainings, addressing the broader problem of racism, they're all really important. I really emphasize, and partly because I'm an educator, the importance of investing in public education. Mm-hmm. One thing that is so important is for us to remember that in certain ways, the recent violence is shocking and new and specific to this moment of scapegoating Asian Americans for the pandemic. And yet, it's part of a broader history of Asian Americans being treated as outsiders and being blamed for problems that are bigger than Asian Americans. I was born in 1982, in the just when Vincent Chin was killed in Michigan. I know that my family's history is deeply intertwined with the blaming of Asian Americans for the loss of auto industry jobs during that decade. And in many ways, as a Michigander, I can't stop and look at this particular moment and not think about how in many ways it's resonant with the sufferings we've seen in the past.
And you don't even, as you said, you don't even have to go back to the Chinese Exclusion Act, for example, of 1882. You just have to go back a couple of decades.
Exactly. You can go back almost any time there is a moment when there is upheaval or suffering. We see scapegoating happen. And it's not just Asian Americans, it's other communities too who are being blamed unfairly.
Right. You know, that's such an important point, Melissa. At a time when we are having a reckoning in this country, talking about the true history of this country, what can educators, media, people in the media do to ensure that the Asian story is also included? Because it's often not. It's often left out.
Yes, this is a major issue. I think one thing that we can continue to do is advocate for the inclusion of ethnic studies education in all levels of schooling. I think this is important. I think bringing Asian American perspectives in conversations about racial injustice, but also conversations about how people are actively working in coalition to address these problems is really, really critical. So we're in the middle of Black History Month right now, and I think it's really powerful to hear these stories of Asian American people working along Black Americans to address injustice, both in the past, but also in the present, as we saw at the beginning of this hour. Mm.
That is Melissa Borja, Assistant Professor of American Culture at the University of Michigan, where she is a core faculty member in the Asian Pacific Islander American Studies Program. And you can find the report that she released called The Return of the Yellow Peril at yourcallradio.org. Cynthia Choi is co-executive director of Chinese for Affirmative Action, one of several groups that helped organize Sunday's action in San Francisco to raise awareness about violent attacks and to call for more interventions like we're discussing today. Cynthia is also co-creator of the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. And if you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts about the escalating violence that we are seeing against Asian Americans in the Bay Area, but really across the country? If you were at the rallies, if you are Asian and you'd like to talk about your experience, what are your thoughts about how we should talk about this, calling for more interventions? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And also, if you'd like to talk about cross-racial healing work, this is so incredibly important. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. Now, as you both said, none of this is true, but it has escalated. And Melissa, if you can just tell us a little bit about the report, The Return of Yellow Peril. You analyzed tweets from presidential and Senate candidates, and you found that Donald Trump was by far the main source of the rhetoric that stigmatizes Asian American people. And then you also looked at tweets that were defending racist terms like Chinese virus and all of the other things that we said, which I'd rather not repeat, but we all heard this over and over in the media. So tell us more about what stood out for you and your findings.
Well, first, before I jump into any of this conversation, I really want to emphasize that it's the WHO and the CDC who first really pointed out that it's not fair to use language that stigmatizes Asian people, Asian American people, and associates them with the new coronavirus. So we are sort of operating with the assumption that that is, you know, the guidance that we have about how we talk about this really terrible pandemic. And it was very shocking to me, even when we know and are getting guidance that we shouldn't use terms like China virus, that many politicians, especially very prominent politicians with very prominent platforms, were continuing, insisting on using those terms even when people asked them explicitly to stop. The most prominent politician to do that was Donald Trump. His tweets using those terms were retweeted over 1 million times, liked over 4 million times. Other politicians followed suit. But what was most striking is the partisan patterns in this behavior. And I will say that even if Donald Trump is no longer president and doesn't have the same Twitter platform, we see the impact of his example continue. Just earlier this winter, the Senate Majority Leader, Mike Shirkey of Michigan, used another stigmatizing term, blaming Asian Americans for the virus or Chinese people for the virus. It continues to be a problem.
I mean, this is incredible when you look at the retweets and the likes. One of Trump's tweets that used rhetoric such as the Chinese virus was retweeted 1.3 million times and liked 4.4 million times. You know, I think it's important for those who maybe aren't on social media. Can you talk about just the influence that these tweets have? You also write in Tom Cotton, incumbent Republican senator from Arkansas. Some of his tweets were liked 204,000 times, and he used similar language.
Yes, I think it's really important to emphasize that it is not just Donald Trump, but a lot of Republican politicians who are using this language, that other studies have pointed out how this language has coincided with other expressions of anti-Asian hate and bias online, and has also coincided, importantly, with acts of violence and harassment targeting Asian Americans. So we see a lot of this language really arising as Asian Americans are suffering. And it's I think, a very painful juxtaposition to know that leaders are using this language that is harmful at the same time Asian Americans are experiencing harm.
Mm. You have so many examples. Joni Ernst, who actually won re-election, is tweeting about the Chinese Communist Party's oppression of people, you know, talking about POTUS holding China accountable, Jim Inhofe, Cory Gardner, Kelly Loeffler, who lost her seat in Georgia. Same thing. The Chinese Communist Party must be held accountable. The Beat China Act would do just that. Can you jump in here, Cynthia, and talk about the effect that the use of this language on Twitter and other social media platforms has had?
Yes. You know, one of the things that we want to emphasize over and over again is that this surge didn't come out of a vacuum, that we have to recognize that not only was this deeply offensive and led to the targeting and attacks of Asian Americans, it also became the rationale to implement policies that were discriminatory and targeting Asian Americans. So as an example, we've had, you know, under the last 4 years, a period where all immigrants of color have been scapegoated and blamed, including Asian Americans. And we know that in historically that U.S. policies, tensions with other Asian countries has had an adverse impact to Asians in the United States. And, you know, that's something that we can't ignore. The anti-China rhetoric, the anti-Chinese rhetoric, has really led to these targets. And we know this because with the firsthand accounts, people are writing to us, telling about these traumatizing experiences and what's being said to them, parroting the former president, invoking his name and saying that, you know, he is going to take care of you, the threat to go back to where you came from. This is, again, not just deeply offensive, but it really did endanger and continues to endanger the lives of Asian Americans.
And in fact, last March, the FBI actually warned of an increase in hate crimes against Asian Americans as the COVID crisis grew. I'm just reading from ABC. The FBI report did not make a reference to Trump or any officials, but wrote, the FBI assesses hate crime incidents against Asian Americans likely will surge across the U.S. due to the spread of COVID endangering Asian American communities. The FBI makes this assessment based on the assumption that a portion of the U.S. will associate COVID with China and Asian American populations. Cynthia, does it matter when an agency like the FBI puts out this sort of alert?
You know, one of the reasons why we established Stop API Hate is not so much that we had a crystal ball, but rather we knew as organizations who have been fighting for the civil rights of Asian Americans alongside other communities of color, is that we knew that this would be very bad for our community, that because our communities would be blamed, that we would certainly anticipated that these attacks would be forthcoming. And unfortunately, our prediction was true. We also know that there is generally underreporting to government agencies and law enforcement because of distrust for a variety of reasons. We know that, for example, members of our community who might be undocumented or have had negative experiences where they haven't gotten a response these reporting centers are not in language. It's one of the reasons why we established that Beep Your Hate. And we were shocked. We were shocked that they came onto our reporting center and reported in great detail what had happened to them. And in a survey that we just completed, a majority of our respondents said the main reason why they came onto their site, our site, was to be a part of the collective voice, because many Asian Americans feel invisible and that our issues do not get attention. And I found that to be really powerful, that they wanted to be a part of this movement.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Cynthia Choi is co-executive director of Chinese for Affirmative Action and co-creator of the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. Melissa Borja is assistant professor of American culture at the University of Michigan and a researcher with the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. On today's Your Call, we are talking about the ongoing violence against the Asian American community in the Bay Area and across the country. A number of community groups are taking to the streets to raise awareness and to talk about what it will take to end these attacks. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk about the fallout of the passage of Proposition 22. That's the ballot measure that defines California's gig workers as independent contractors, not employees. Last month, Albertsons and subsidiary stores fired unionized delivery drivers and replaced them with third-party gig workers. Labor groups say this is just the beginning of what's to come. So what can be done to ensure workers are protected? If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation about the ongoing rise of violence and attacks against Asian Americans, and what needs to be done to raise awareness about this, to end this violence, to really have honest conversations and cross-racial healing work, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Cynthia Choi is co-executive director of Chinese for Affirmative Action and co-creator of the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. Melissa Borja is assistant professor of American culture at the University of Michigan and an affiliated researcher with the Reporting Center. And let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Amy in Berkeley. Hi, Amy. Welcome to the show. Oh, Amy just dropped. You can call back if you hear your name, Amy. Let's go to Jan in Emeryville. Hi, Jan.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, there's two things. My background is I am one of those Asians that was attacked several years ago. It was underreported by the police. I went through the whole legal system, very disappointed, very hurt. But the reason I'm calling now is that I, having been a person that was attacked and being Asian, I see it continuing as a systemic problem, because even that company, in Chicago advertised for non-Asians in their job application. I believe the company was APTUDE, Aptude, based in Chicago. Now, to me, this is systemic, and it's almost like no colored people need apply, no whites only. You know, back in the days, the old days before your time, there was no dogs or Chinese allowed. You may forget that, but this is very fresh in my memory. Over.
Jan, I'm so sorry this happened. Do you want to share anything about your experience and how you're doing today?
It took me close to 5 years of intensive therapy because they meant to kill me. They meant to do me bodily harm. And the reason I say, and I'm being fourth generation, I am fourth generation, and I do remember Vincent Chin very well. I felt that the police underreported it, they underplayed it, but being an American, I went through the legal system. I was very, very disappointed in the U.S. judicial system. Evidently, I was like victim number 5 or 6 on this long list because I took it all the way to the court, and I paid for the legal fees myself. And I have to say that I see this getting worse and not better. Over.
And Jan, can I ask you, can you tell us more about what was in this job application? Or what was the wording?
This is what gets me, too, is that you seem to zero in only on the local. This is a national problem because Asians are being attacked nationally. This job application with APTUDE, that company, based out of Chicago, and it's an IT company, and it's specifically advertised non-Asians wanted. In other words, they did not want specifically Asians. And I believe if you check your records, a reporter from ABC tracked it down, and then it was dropped after just one airing.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jan. And I'm so sorry. Thank you for sharing your experience. Cynthia,
I want to thank you to the young people who are on the air today, because in my generation, we did not talk about it because we were so disappointed by our representatives, the legal system. And in other words, as a fourth generation U.S. citizen, I was disappointed in my country. Over. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jan. Cynthia, Jan brought up a number of points there. When you talk to people who are reporting attacks, are they having similar experiences today? As Jan said, it was underreported. It sounds like her entire experience with the legal system was just very disappointing and traumatizing.
Yeah, I also want to thank Jan for sharing her story. And you know, what I can say is that we know that survivors of interpersonal violence, and including their families, because it doesn't just affect the individual themselves, historically have not received, the services that they deserve across all systems, including the judicial system. So it is really important for people to speak out and to get the support that they need, however they want to pursue their case. And I do want to just emphasize the fact that, as Jan shared, this is traumatic and can be lifelong trauma. And so it is important in particular to make sure that people get mental health services. One of the things that we do know is that there was a recent statewide audit looking at 3 law enforcement agencies. And we know that in a lot of cases, hate crimes are not categorized correctly, that there needs to actually be more education about responses to specific hate crimes. But I think also there's tremendous burden on the individual to prove that, in fact, it is a hate crime. And that's often very, very difficult to do. So things that we're trying to emphasize is more enforcements of civil rights protections. So if you're in a workplace Or in California, we have very specific laws that protect you. For example, if you receive discriminatory treatment in private businesses. So those are the things that, in fact, this Thursday, we're doing a webinar for community members with the Department of Fair Employment and Housing, with this, which is the chief enforcer of those civil rights protections. But I'm afraid that Jan's experience is not unique.
Melissa, anything to add?
I would just say, Jan, I'm so sorry that happened for you. And I see that there are two levels of harm here. The first, harm to your physical well-being, your mental well-being, but more broadly, the way that the event and your experience with the legal system destroyed your faith in the power of our institutions to address this issue. And so I feel that our responsibility is to continue to press for accountability, to make our institutions better, to create other institutions to support people. I also want to appreciate your emphasis on the fact that this is a national problem. Many of the best solutions are at the local level, but one reason why Stop AAPI Hate's work is so powerful is because we're taking experiences of Asian Americans all across the country. Places like Indiana, where I happen to live right now, where there aren't a lot of Asian Americans, where their experiences are often overlooked, where there aren't good local institutions to attend to their needs. What we are doing at Stop AAPI Hate is bringing their voices together, their experiences together, and addressing this nationally. So I appreciate you reminding us that this is a national problem that requires both attention to how it's playing out at the local level and national level.
And Cynthia, Jan mentioned that she had 5 years of therapy. Can you talk about resources that are available for people? I mean, we've done so many shows about mental health, and it's really difficult to find a therapist that works for you, especially right now.
Yes, this is one of the key issues that we are looking very closely at, especially for those who are uninsured and don't have access to mental health services, which, you know, we're having a national mental health crisis. Even those who are insured, I understand, are having difficulty finding someone. And in particular, who has expertise, cultural competence. We have community members who are limited English speaking. So this is, you know, a major, major problem. I did want to follow up on Melissa's comment, which is, you know, Stop AAPI Hate not only documents and helps to analyze so that we can have better responses. We are actually working with individuals and different agencies across the country, especially in areas where they don't have a large AAPI community or infrastructure to respond to local incidents. This past week, we talked with individuals and organizations in Oregon, in Ohio. We've supported groups in New York and other places, precisely because one of the things that we're really wanting to share and have exchanges about is what to do, what is the response. And I think many of us are having this conversation that there tends to be an over-reliance on law enforcement approaches when oftentimes what we need more is resources to do the supportive services, to do the education work, and to do the culturally competent work that's necessary to really heal our communities and to address the immediate harm.
Jan also raised the issue around a job ad, and we just found an article about that at ABC7. A now-removed Bay Area job posting by a tech company on LinkedIn has drawn immense criticism for requiring applicants to be, quote, non-Asian. This came from a company called Aptitude, and Aptitude and LinkedIn issued apologies after a text was sent to ABC7 news anchor Dion Lim. And this was an article from February 12th, just a couple of days ago. Melissa, have you heard about this? And what are your thoughts on this?
Yes, I've seen discussions online about this very case, and I have to say, on one level, I'm surprised, and on another level, I'm not. Mm-hmm. These instances of discrimination are both deeply rooted in our history. I think we fool ourselves if we think we are done with racism in America. Instances like this remind us that we continue to have so much work to do.
Well, to your point, we have an email from Denise who says, it is deeply upsetting to me that the AAPI community is being targeted during the pandemic, and even more depressing because it's a pattern of hate and violence. What can history tell us about the most effective ways to respond? Melissa, can you take that first?
Well, as a history professor, I really appreciate the chance to talk about what the past can teach us about what we can do in the present. I think the most important thing we can take away from the past is the importance of working together. To be Asian American is to be fundamentally coalitional. The idea of being Asian American developed when Asian people of different ethnic backgrounds decided they were stronger together if they worked together. And we see in lots of different moments in history the power of working in coalition across ethnic lines and across racial lines. I've mentioned Vincent Chin already. When Asian American activists were seeking justice in the wake of the killing of Vincent Chin, Jesse Jackson and other Black leaders were showing support for this activism. And we see really amazing coalitional work taking place in the present as well. We see Black, Latino, Asian American people fighting voter suppression in Georgia. We see Japanese American incarcerees advocating for forcibly separated migrant children at the border. We see so many instances of people crossing boundaries and working together to address injustice. And I think that's really the way forward.
What would you add, Cynthia?
Well, I couldn't agree with Melissa more. I mean, this past weekend, we came together as the Bay Area, both San Francisco and Oakland-based organizations, to really demonstrate that in order to address these incidents of violence, we really need to work together. And the theme, Love Our People, Heal Our Communities, was really a message for all our communities. There isn't a single community that isn't affected by violence, by crime. And I think that we have to come together to really address the root causes of that, to really be able to listen to each other, to really come together around much more difficult things like bias within our own communities. No one is immune, I think, to the racialization of COVID. We've seen from our own reporting center that these are incidents that are occurring across communities. And so it's very, very important that we also not only look at our history, but also ways that that we've come together historically. And this is certainly the case now. Now more than ever, we are having these conversations within the API community, but across communities, because we know that we have to address structural racism if we are going to get through this and get through this together.
Well, thank you for the email, Denise. Let's hear from Amy. Hi, Amy. Thank you for holding.
Hi. Along those lines of coming together in solidarity and something to do about it, I am not Asian myself, but many, in fact, a majority of my students are. And so yesterday I attended an online training that was hosted by iHollaBack, and their website is iHollaBack.org. And they do free bystander trainings and trainings also for people who are targets of harassment. And the one I attended yesterday was actually for people who are targets of anti-Asian harassment. And that one's going to be offered again on March 19. I'm not sure what time. And there's one tomorrow that's going to be offered at 2 p.m. Pacific time for bystanders who witness anti-Asian and other xenophobic harassment and violence. And so I want to really strongly encourage people to attend these kinds of trainings, both for how to be an ally and how to help when you're a bystander and witness, and how to intervene and witness and report. And also the one yesterday, because I've been a target of other types of harassment, was really good about offering ideas and strategies and techniques for self-care and also for self-defense.
Well, thank you for that. If you wouldn't mind, we're familiar with Holla Back. Can you email us with information about those trainings? We'll try to find it also after the show at yourcall@kalw.org, and then we'll link those on our website.
Will do. I just pulled over to make this phone call, so I'm on my way to a dentist appointment, and I'll do that as soon as I get home.
Okay, thank you so much, Amy. We really appreciate it. Thank you. Can we spend a little bit of time also talking about racial healing? I think this is so important, and this is a conversation that, you know, when you get to the root of the problem, it can be uncomfortable to have. I found an interesting Instagram account yesterday called Black and Asian Souls Unite. There's a picture of a young Black man who's at a rally, and he's got a sign that says, "Stop assaulting and robbing Chinese and seniors." There's a video of a young Black man who is escorting older Asians to the grocery store or wherever they're going, just to make them feel, ensure that they feel safe. But there's also some disturbing videos of, you know, young Black men and women talking about the racism that they've endured from Asians, and then in turn, they're being racist against Asians. And, you know, Cynthia, it's something that we really have to talk about. And can you just address this? How can we really honestly talk about these issues?
Yeah, I think you're raising a very important point. And this is the work that we are engaged in every day. These incidents are drawing a lot of local, national, and even international attention. And I think it's important to recognize that many of our community-based organizations are leading those efforts. And it really does start with organizing and convening spaces within our communities so we can talk about bias. And again, as I mentioned before, no community is immune to that. Without education, without, I think, challenging, you know, racist ideology and bias more directly within our communities, it's going to be difficult to have cross-dialogue community. And so that's the work that actually I'm really excited to share more about on this call that we're trying to support locally. Much of the work that we're trying to do here is to invest in local community-based organizations in parts of the city where there's disproportionate levels of crime and violence and, you know, racial tensions, perceptions about, you know, who belongs in the community, perceptions about who has resources and who don't have resources. And again, this anti-immigrant climate, the racialization of COVID has exacerbated an already difficult situation where neighbors are turning against each other. And this is the work that will take a lot of resources and time to effectively do well. And that is something that I think we need to continue to raise awareness around, that this needs continual support and will not change overnight. So that's the work that, again, is happening at the local level. And we are aware that this is also happening in other parts of the country, in places like Minnesota and, you know, in Chicago, Atlanta. These are all things that many community-based organizations are working in solidarity with the Black community.
Melissa, what would you add?
I agree with everything that Cynthia said. And I think for those Asian American people who are listening today and are feeling angry and upset and sad about what has happened recently, I encourage you to focus on responding to this violence by just reaffirming the shared worth and dignity of all of our neighbors in our communities. there is I will speak frankly, a long history of anti-Blackness in Asian American communities. I think it's important for us to be honest about that. But I will also point out that in the Twitter study that you referenced earlier, none of the politicians who are using the stigmatizing rhetoric were Black. I think it's important for us to really think carefully about what is really going on. And I think of greater focus of our attention should be systemic racism and the way that we're going to find a way forward is really doing the hard work of listening to each other and working in solidarity.
And final thoughts, Cynthia, for people listening who would like to get involved and show their solidarity, what's the best way to go about that?
Well, that's been very heartening to see people from every walks of life, you know, trying to get involved and help everything from escorting our elderly to voicing their concern. I think it's really important to follow the lead of community-based organizations that are on the ground doing this work every day. So contacting our coalition locally here, by contacting CAA, we can help direct volunteers and individuals. I think it's important to know that we are, you know, actively working on three very important areas, which is making sure survivors and their families get the support that they need in language to deal with both the trauma and getting the resources that will help them fully recover. And we are advocating for more intervention and prevention-based programs that will really get to the root causes, including, you know, addressing economic inequality in our city. And of course, as Melissa has stated, the public education work is essential. And that needs to happen within our communities to address bias and anti-Blackness and across communities as well.
Cynthia Choi is co-executive director of Chinese for Affirmative Action and co-creator of the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. Cynthia, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us. We're actually receiving a lot of emails from listeners who just want to say thank you and they stand in solidarity with the Asian American community.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And happy birthday to your mom.
Thank you.
Thank you. Melissa Borja is assistant professor of American culture at the University of Michigan, where she is a core faculty member in the Asian Pacific Islander American Studies program and affiliated researcher with the Stop AAPI Hate Reporting Center. Melissa, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you. We will definitely continue to follow this and do additional shows in the coming weeks and months. You can find more information and some of the articles that we talked about today, and we'll find information on those upcoming events and post those at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Joanne Marr for engineering our show. Find more information, yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.